Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba, Asheda, Mojuba, Alua, me, Apolabi, Pega, Mojuba, Araba, me, Adesanya, Awuyade, Mojuba, Ogute, Compound, Ode Remo, Mojuba, Baba, Mojuba, Yeye, Mojuba, Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba, Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba, Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe, Ashe,
Ashe. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Ty here. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC and New Power Radio Network. We ask that you please support our sponsors, Manhood, Race, and Culture, headed up by my co-host tonight, Dr. James Jones. Please check him out on Facebook as James Jones, as well as Manhood, Race, and Culture, a like page and a group page on Facebook. You also can find him on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also, please support Arlie Gordon of Unity Design. Find Arlie on Facebook as well as Arlie Gordon II. and on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And Unity is spelled UNITTE. We also want to never forget our brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines. So please get involved with the Free Alabama Movement at freealabamamovement.com, as well as Free Ohio Movement at freeohiomovement.com. And also the newest member of the Sign of the Times family, Unheard Voices. Please look them up on Facebook as Unheard Voices and reach out to them. Check out their fundraising events that they're having. They have beanie caps, ball caps, and bracelets that you can wear to show your support for Unheard Voices that represents the unheard voices of confined citizens, their family, friends, and loved ones. So tonight we are going to be discussing with Dr. James Jones how we can step up our educational platform and how we do business with one another on multiple levels. What do we need to be learning or experiencing or researching on this journey as we build unity and mend the fences, if you will, between organizations, people, projects, and whatever we need to do to make sure that the healing takes place that needs to happen in order for us to make sure that the next generations do not have to experience the things that we are experiencing as African people here in the U.S. So Dr. Jones will be joining us shortly. We're going to hang out for a little bit, check out a little bit of music. You're listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. If you would like to make a donation to Sign of the Times, you can do that via our PayPal email address at signothetimes19@gmail.com. Again, signothetimes19@gmail.com. Please go to PayPal, get a contribution to our organization so that we can continue to do the good work that we do here on Sign of the Times and continue to expand this platform that we've developed with trust, unity, and mutual respect. If you would like to send it by mail, you can do that at 1623 Dalton Street, D-A-L-T-O-N, number 14939, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. So hang out with us for a little bit. We're going to check out a little bit of Curtis Mayfield. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening. Hang out with me.
Diamond in the back.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Queen Tahiri. Wednesday night's Hot Topics with Dr. James Jones and New Power Radio Network. Peace, Dr. Jones. Welcome to Sign of the Times. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Queen. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hanging in here.
All right. That sounds good.
Ashe. You. So tonight's topic, we were going to discuss improving our educational platform and doing that on a comprehensive level. So I yield to you to introduce tonight's topic.
Okay. What we were talking about last week dealing with is the idea You know, so often we spend so much of our time reacting, being reactionary and what have you. We have to have these moments and these discussions and actually these actions that are aimed at not being reactionary and actually going forward and building and pouring into our children, to be absolutely honest with you. It's shocking and befuddling to me every time I go before a group of African-American students and I'm undone at how much they do not know about our people and about our history, about our culture, even about our literary tradition. You know, to put it simply, I'm finding more and more that our people, number one, do not read. And if they are reading, they're reading these god-awful urban, you know, novels, Bad Girl Gone Bad, you know, Good Girl Gone Bad that's coming back to get pimplicious, you know. And, you know, our tradition, our writing tradition, our intellectual tradition is so much grander than that. So I thought it would be an interesting thing for us to go ahead and look at exactly what it is that we're missing in regards to the literary and the literary tradition. You know, because quite simply, we're not handling it, you know, in what I would term to what I would consider a appropriate, accept, or even an acceptable condition or manner. You know, I'll give you one clear example, and this is one that I use often because it's probably the most startling. I ask my students every semester, how many of them have read the autobiography of Malcolm X? And I used to be trying to get a gauge for what they've been exposed to. And invariably, maybe at the most, three hands out of an auditorium of 100 people would raise up. And those three people would basically say that they had to read the autobiography of Malcolm X solely because their parents made them do it. Well, if I switch the question and I ask them, how many of you have read The Diary of Anne Frank? Every hand in the auditorium raises up. And, you know, and I just asked them, which one do you think better serves your life, could teach you something that you need to know about yourself, your people, and your life? And, of course, they agree that it's the autobiography of Malcolm X, and I make them read it. You know, and to follow that one step further, I'll say this, that the autobiography of Malcolm X, for the first time since it was released, I want to say that this happened maybe 4 or 5 years ago, is out of print as a regular printing. They'll do special runs of it when it's requested, but by and large, it's out of print. And when we really think about what that means to our people, to our tradition, to where we're headed, it is frightening. In a word, it is extremely frightening. And I yield with that right there, Queen. That's what we were supposed to talk about today. And in preparation for that, I dug back. I actually only had to go back a couple months to find something that I wrote dealing with this issue. And and so if you want to, we can go ahead and jump into the piece.
That sounds good. Let's go.
Okay. I actually have two of them, but let's see which one would be more appropriate for us. Okay. Let me just jump in the first one, and if we have time, we can do the next one. It's titled, Where Have All of the Serious Black Writers Gone? How Black America is Efficiently Destroying Its Intellectual Class. And it reads as follows. Except for a few exceptions, the vast majority of news programming aimed at African Americans should be reclassified as celebrity gossip television, as it rarely diverts from mindless nonsense and superficial analysis. Beyond Roland Martin's News One coverage, Black America is largely devoid of media outlets that provide pertinent information designed to illuminate a path to liberation. I am uncertain if we should blame the black press or black people for the current absence of in-depth news coverage aimed at black America. The black press's contemporary irrelevance is not only unprecedented, but also intertwined with its non-desire to cover significant issues within black America. Someone needs to inform the black press that extensive coverage of church anniversaries and community barbecues instead of political matters and socioeconomic issues affecting black America makes them co-conspirators in the oppression of their people. Sadly, the black press has become so irrelevant to the lives of black Americans that the periodicals are given away for free. If the adage of, and I quote, "that which is given away for free has no value to others," end quote, holds true, the black press is in a more precarious position than I initially thought. Make no mistake about it, any marginalized and oppressed population whose only means of communication hinges upon their gaining access to their oppressor's media outlets is in serious trouble. Not only can they be muted at any moment, but also their most revolutionary voices are guaranteed to be filtered, censored, or silenced. The above issues facing the black press are made exponentially worse by the harsh reality that a significant portion of black America has developed what could be termed, appropriately termed, a ravenous appetite for salacious celebrity gossip and conspiracy theories based upon nothingness. The gravitational pull that popular culture nonsense has upon African Americans has resulted in not only the decline of the black press, but also the vanquishing of a long tradition of revolutionary penmen who have always provided daunting critiques and analysis of racism while also pointing the way to liberation. Although rarely heard from anymore, a cadre of serious black writers still exist within America. Unfortunately for black intellectuals, they have been coerced into taking a Faustian deal of A, working for white companies, B, subduing the intellectual quality of their penmanship, or C, remaining entirely independent of white censorship and financial support. I have chosen the final option. Unfortunately, the long tradition of black writers who were heard and celebrated as a result of the courage they displayed while speaking truth to power has nearly ground to a halt. In the words of Mos Def, African-American writers have learned an arduous lesson of, and I quote, "freedom ain't free," end quote. Consequently, financial concerns have prepared the vast majority of black writers for co-optation by the very entities that they should oppose. Ironically, the fall of independent black writers is directly related to the intellectual decline of an African-American populace that succinctly expresses its hostility to black intelligence by refusing to support black scholarship in any written form. Despite all efforts to refute this reality, the unfortunate reality is that black America in its totality has no interest in increasing its understanding of either its oppression or a path to escape from it. The resistance of African Americans to support serious black scholarship guarantees that we will never see another James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, Alice Walker, County Cullen, Maya Angelou, or Toni Morrison, at least not at the same rate that they appeared during the 20th century. Contemporary novelists realized that the tide has shifted away from substantive black literature detailing the beauty of African-American life. Modern black readers shun works such as The Third Life of Grange Copeland by Alice Walker, Beloved by Toni Morrison, Native Son by Richard Wright, or Kindred by Octavia Butler, for ghetto pimp tales and lascivious tales revolving around sexual impropriety. Unfortunately for black intellectualism, ghetto urban stories about drugs, crime, prostitution, adultery, and fornication are devoured by black anti-intellectuals as if they are life-sustaining air. There is no greater sign of the damage that an irrelevant school curriculum, an excessive exposure to and integration of a morally reprehensible dysfunctional culture has upon the psyche of black America than its inability or non-desire to engage black literature and intellectual writings in a significant manner. It is this transformation of black America, not the election of Donald Trump, which should frighten African Americans because it guarantees that the oppression of African Americans will continue unabated well into the new century. Ironically, If manhood, race, and culture were not an independent space where I am beholden to no one, I would be unable to address this matter with the truthfulness that I have. I prefer my independence, regardless of the financial cost. And rest assured, there's a steep economic cost associated with that decision. I understood long ago that white media outlets would never allow a strong black voice such as mine to emerge without censoring it in some form or fashion. The fact that serious black scholars invariably have to maintain some type of relationship with white entities to ensure their material survival should be the epitome of embarrassment to black America. However, I have found that black America has neither shame nor embarrassment when it comes time to support black writers who have sacrificed significant portions of their lives illuminating a path to liberation. The absence of support via the purchase of books, a voluntary donation, or even a quick note makes the road that independent black scholars traverse not only lonely, but also incredibly dark and daunting. So on behalf of all independent black writers, let me encourage you to offer some signal that you appreciate what we do, because it is hard out here on those of us who have yet to bow our heads and go work for the man. And that's the piece right there, Queen.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. Excellent piece as usual. And I want to, if we could, separate the two things that you talked about. In the beginning, you spoke on the fact that our sources of information, entertainment, and education had basically changed so much to where it basically co-signed on a lot of the tomfoolery that we see in our communities. And on the second part, you addressed the fact that no longer do the literary scholars exist that at one time put forth great writings and challenged us to think beyond our boundaries, think outside our own personal space, think outside the box, and be able to experience what they experienced through what they chose to write about. And so in addressing the first piece, where you talk about how we obtain our information, do you think that because information is so available to us that it has gotten us away from, I guess, challenging ourselves to explore other sources of learning and reading and literary resources? You know, it's so easy to open up a tablet than it is to go to the library and actually check out a book. And so if so, what happened? Why was it so easy for us to become so lazy about educating ourselves?
You know, I think that you're on to something right there. Let's face facts. We live in a different time. I'm reminded of something one of my colleagues said about W.E.B. Du Bois and how prolific Du Bois was. He makes this comment. He says, look, man, Du Bois didn't have a TV, meaning that we have something in our lives that takes up a lot of our times that Du Bois did not have to struggle against. I think the same can be true for the current generation on one hand, because quite simply, they have not had to develop the love for the quote unquote love for reading that many within our generation did. Yet at the exact same time, it says something else about the lack of, and this is one of the things that saddens me, probably the thing that saddens me more than anything else when I'm dealing with young African Americans, it is the absence of intellectual curiosity. They're not even curious about it. They've been somehow been turned off from it. And that turn-off switch that they've experienced has in many ways terminated that what should be a natural curiosity to learn, to think about some things, to investigate some things. You know, one of the constant things that we hear, you know, I'm a historian, so I constantly hear the idea that all we ever talk about is white folk. when we're talking about history classes. Well, in my class, you know, I usher you through the entirety of American history through the lens of black folk. You know, if I'm talking about Thomas Jefferson, I'm going to explain Jefferson through the lens of Sally Hemings and her descendants, okay? So we're always there in my lectures, and the vast majority of them still don't get it. They still don't care. And so I begin to look at that as an excuse, that, well, we don't talk about us. It's an excuse on one hand, but on the other hand, I think that it's representative of the dumbing down of an entire nation. We're at this moment, and I believe that we're in the throes of it, that Abraham Lincoln warned us about, when Lincoln says, America will never fall at the hands of an external aggressor. She'll fall from within. And I believe the eroding of intelligence, of intellectual curiosity, is killing our people. Now, how did we get there? I don't know. I don't know. I part of me doesn't know, but then there's another part of me that does know. And that part of me wants to say, let's not dream up a past that never existed and begin to talk and converse and act like the library was ever full of our people. I believe that, you know, and I was there. I can tell you, being at the Mansfield Public Library, you know, my sister considered me the ultimate nerd. Punishment for me was not being allowed to go to the library and access books. You know, that was the punishment that I received, and that was a horrible punishment because my mother would almost taunt me by driving by the library to remind me what my bad behavior had cost me. But even when I was there under good standing, that library wasn't full of black folk. And so I don't think that this distancing of black folk from an intellectual life is new, number one. And number two, I don't believe that we've lost our writers. I just believe that right now at this moment, we have an even less of a market for black intellectual writing than we've ever had in the history of our existence as a people. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, well, another one of the things that you talked about in the very beginning too, Dr. Jones, was the literary tradition of our people. And so let's talk about that a little bit so people can understand the difference between, I guess, receiving an oral history, which is also a tradition of ours that we no longer have or not have as much of or not have the types of stories that offer some sort of ability for who is ever listening to learn from. And so our oral history and our oral traditions have also gotten lost along with our literary traditions. So can you tell the listeners, in your perspective, what's the difference between the two and how they work together?
You know, the thing is that what we're talking about is information and the transference of information across generations. The written word is no more valid than the oral traditions that we had historically from our ancestors, you know, the griots, who could remember, you know, each and every aspect of our history of, you know, what happened to our people and what have you. They're both very valid. But what we've had is a disjunction with the oral tradition because young folk have become too preoccupied, have become too distracted by these quote-unquote modern conveniences, these technological advancements, to spend any time not only learning but also valuing that which could be transferred into them, poured into them, so to speak, via the oral tradition. They're simply on to something else. Gloria Naylor, not the singer, not I Will Survive Gloria Naylor, but the writer Gloria Naylor, touches upon this in her great book, Mama Day, where she talks about it's set on a South Carolina sea island. And the worst thing that happens to those black folk on that sea island is when a bridge is built from the Sea Island to the main island, and it allows its young people to go there, to go to the main island with relative ease. And that main island, the culture, the values, the priorities that they find there are going to, in many ways, not only affect those young people, but also eventually extinguish the culture that was on the Sea Island. And many times people consider that progress. But in saying that, I'm reminded of a lyric from Grand Verbalizer Funkinless and Brother Jay from X-Clan, where he says quite simply, ignorance is not a trend. And when we think about it, all we need, especially for people whose history in our past has been passed down orally, you know, we're reminded of that great, those great moments in Alex Haley's Roots where the history of the family is told repeatedly to the point where, you know, you memorized it. You understood that you were from Jufere and what have you. But if we really understand what Grand Verbalizer was saying, that ignorance is not a trend, allow that oral tradition to be skipped for one generation, it's lost forever. And I think that that's what has happened to our people. Now, when we're talking about the written tradition, I mean, so many of the quote-unquote popular writers that we have now, they're not even writers. You know, as someone once put it, that's not writing, that's typing. But what ends up happening is that for those who have not dealt with Chester Himes, for those who have not dealt with Zora, who have not dealt with Langston Hughes, who don't know who James Baldwin is or Richard Wright, and the list could go on and on and on of great writers coming out of the African-American community. If you've never engaged them, you'll think that something that Omar Tyree wrote was actually good. It's the equivalent of if all you've ever eaten is Jack in the Box and somebody take you to McDonald's, you might be like, oh my God, this is what's happening. Not realizing that there are things that are so much, so far superior to that, that your taste buds can't even begin to comprehend them. And I yield with that, Queen. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, indeed. Dr. Jones, our parents are usually our first teacher. So actually our education experience starts even in the womb because we inherit whatever life experience, educational experience. We inherit that just by birth by, you know, who our parents are and who we're born to. And so because information is so available to us, we really owe it to ourselves and the people who are looking for leadership, whether they be young, old, or whatever. We really owe it to them to go back and reestablish those traditions. I mean, I don't see where we have a choice but to. That's if we deem them the important ingredients that it took for us to develop strong character, to develop a natural love for our brothers and sisters, to want to work in a more unified manner, past, you know, going to church with one another. We've got to get back to those community values. So how can we start to reestablish some of those literary and oral traditions? Should we be using social media more? Should we be helping each other record some of these books for those who have difficulty reading? What exactly, you know, what can we do?
You know, I think that especially when you're dealing with social media, there's a part of me that wants to, that harkens back to the old Public Enemy battle cry, you know, turn off the radio, you know, turn off the TV or what have you. But social, for me, social media is nothing other than a tool. It's a phenomenal, magnificent tool if you want to be absolutely honest about it, that could be used in phenomenal ways to be absolutely brutally honest. But how do we get back to there? You know, my argument is that I'm not certain that we ever were there. And it's one of the things that I rest upon. You know, Michael Eric Dyson wrote this great essay once, and it's titled We Never Were What We Used to Be. And what he talks about in that piece is quite simply how we recreate a past that we would like to see in the present. Now, in saying that, I'm also saying the truth of the matter is that when you're dealing with us getting to a point where we love each other, that we can begin to recreate that what Dyson would call a mythical past. Not only will it be impossible to do, as long as our people are immersed in receiving the images that they have from popular culture, we have to tip our hat to the reality and to the fact that those who have stood against us have done a phenomenal job at promoting negative images of our people. And when you're in a situation where that's where you're getting your information, those negative images, I don't care who you are, as long as that's your intellectual diet, your cultural viewpoint, you're for all intents and purposes, as Du Bois talked about, you're looking at the world and even your people through the eyes of your oppressor. And that's a very unfortunate and sad position to be in. But nonetheless, it's one that the vast majority of our people are in. And it's the reason why we have such animosity towards each other. We have such angst where there is no honor to be found amongst us. We'll come curry to our own. Because in many ways, when we look at the world, we're looking at it through the lens of white folk, their perspective, their value system, their feelings of who we are. So the only way that I can even begin to wrap my mind around us getting back to a positive past for Black folk would be if we totally unplugged from each and every negative image that they have out there about us and plugged ourselves into what could only be considered immersing ourselves in positive Black images. Everything has to be Black and everything has to be progressive and positive. And we're talking about an immersion that would have to, we would have to do that for 6-7 generations, to the point where anyone who remembered anything else has died off, you know. And when 6-7 generations from now, our children come into the world, they would have to have been raised in a world where even if they were to see some of the images of how Black folk portray themselves today, they would be trained in a way where they would look at those images and almost see them as blackface minstrel depictions. But until we can get there, that's the only path that we can get there. And I'll end my answer with this. One of my friends, me and her cousin, we were best friends. We grew up together in Mansfield, Ohio. And she put up today a little story about her son. And, you know, it's Valentine's Day yesterday. And so, you know, and this is an educated, progressive woman. And, I'm sure she's raising her children and, you know, with progressive values and what have you. But she says that he comes to the car. She goes to pick him up from school. And he comes to the car and he has 4 or 5 different bags of Valentine's Day gifts. And so she knows that he didn't take anybody a Valentine's Day at all. And so she inquires, she says, so What type of man will go? And keep in mind, this is a boy who is still in elementary school, I believe. She asked him, what type of man would go and would accept Valentine's Day gifts from girls, and he didn't bring them nothing? And she said his response was quick, and in many ways took her back. He had one word response: a pimp. So even within what we would term educated progressive people, you have that still. You still have it. You know that, I don't know what to call it, but that it, whatever that it is that gets into black folk, he has it. Somewhere along the lines, he was exposed to it, and he now has it, and he expressed it, you know, to his mother. So we got to unplug from everything. And now, in regards to, because as you know, I'm not a cultural nationalist. I'm not a person who would wrap myself in what I would term a pseudo African culture at all. So I don't even know what we would replace what we're dealing with right now with. I don't know what that would look like, you know. But for doggone sure, what we're doing now is not working, and we need to unplug and detox our minds and our bodies, and then pour something else into it for several generations if we have any hope of ever reversing this. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, I think one of the things that I know contributes to the negative images of ourselves, the negative impressions that some of our young people have with who we are as a group of people, is the fact that too many of them think that our history started at slavery. They're not experiencing who we really are as a group of people and where we really truly come from. And again, you know, that goes back to who their parents are, how they were educated, what things that they were exposed to literally and through family tradition. So if they have not experienced learning who they are, then it would be really easy to continue to knock that spirit down in them that would challenge what they're being taught in school as to, you know, black history. And even during Black History Month, it really is not a true representation of black history. It's a representation of American history, black history told from an American perspective. And so, again, you know, we've got all of these groups out here that say that they represent the best interests of us and our community as black people, the NAACP, the Urban League, all these groups out here that say that they represent our best interests, but yet our best interest is always a topic of political, social, and economic conversation. So those people need to be held accountable, just like, you know, we do, as, you know, as we're holding ourselves accountable for trying to, I guess, help assist and see this paradigm shift that needs to take place through the conversations we have here on Side of the Times, the conversations we have with our children, our loved ones, and those who are around us, and standing our ground when they look at us 14 karat crazy, because, you know, that's not what they're with, and that's not who the people they're around the majority of the time, that's not what they're about. But that shouldn't change, you know, how and who we are and how we present the facts so that our children can experience, you know, at least being around some people who want to see better for them and are willing to help them do better for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, it's I think we need to take advantage, Dr. Jones, of, you know, we always talk about changing the dynamics of the energies that's out here in the community, but we also need to use the things that the system has traditionally used to their advantage, to our advantage, too. And whether it be social media, or, you know, by the fact that you have all the information on manhood, race, and culture. It's a, just a damn shame that more people aren't, I guess, trying to engage, and they can't move past the superficial differences that seem to continue to divide us and keep us apart, and I deal with that.
You know, the thing for me is, and I agree with everything that you said, but I think that we have to look at our people as people who have been taking a, let's say, a sugar sweetener for so long. They've been on equal. They've been on whatever it is that their chosen substitute is. And they've been on that so long that if you were to bring them something with sugar in it, the real thing, it would say, that's too sweet. That's too sweet right there for me. And you have to say, well, you've gotten used to a falsehood. You've gotten used to a falsity. And when the real deal is brought to you, you can't even stomach it. And I think that represents so much of the appetite that our people have developed. The fact that you can look at any of these quote unquote black popular culture website, be it Bossa, be it World Star Hip Hop, Media Takeout, and they're booming in traffic. There's a guy on Facebook, and I'm sure you've come across him. I want to say that it's Farai Soraya or something like that. And I put up a post that was, when you write something, I think that there's something innate within you that, and I don't know if it's the ease with which you wrote it or how you're feeling that day, but there are times as a writer, you write something and you say, you know what, yo, that's good right there. That's good. I had one of those moments, and I put the post up, and it sat there for probably 5-6 hours. Okay. And I pinned it to the top of the Facebook group, Manhood, Race, and Culture. And it was him that came on there, and he said, he left a message. He said, why do we even try? Why do we do what it is that we do? He said, this has been up here for hours and not a single like. He said, this is pitiful. Absolutely, positively pitiful. And when you look at that and you consider that there are more people who know who Young Thug is than know who Terrence Blanchard is. There are people who know who Omar Tyree is, but have never heard of James Baldwin. You know, you have to, you know, if you're not anchored in something, dealing with our people would really and oftentimes drive you insane. You know, I've been having interactions with a sister who is involved with Boyce Watkins's projects. And she contacted me and asked me, she said, how do you drive traffic to your site? Because I can't get anyone to come to mine. And I looked at her site, I looked at what she was writing about, and what she's writing about is black wealth empowerment. And I had to tell this sister flat out, it's not you, it's them. It's not your content, it's them. That they have no interest whatsoever in anything that is dealing with black uplift, with black liberation. They don't. Now, if you put some naked pictures up on your site, some women shaking their booty, oh, they'll flock to it. And, you know, it often takes me back to, and you know, I said this on a radio show, and people you know, the phones lit up and people were angry. But I believe that this is true. Okay. And Paul Mooney said this first. He said, black people are slow. He said, that's what it is. He said, you look at how we have no strategy. We've allowed others to come here dirt poor. And in a generation or two, they're above us because of our inability to work together, our inability to do whatever it is we need to do. It leaves you with no other conclusion than the observation that black people are slow. They have to be. There's no. It goes against the laws of nature and physics that we could be in the same spot that we are now, that we've been for so very long. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's had a major effect upon me, to the point where this past Tuesday, my 8 o'clock class, somehow we got to talking, just talking about life. And one of them asked me, young lady, she said, so what can we do? What can we do to help, you know, our people? And I was shocked when my immediate response was, don't mess with black people.
Mm-hmm.
And their response was, what? We wouldn't expect you to say that, this and that. And I said, well, I'm giving you a Cliff Note version of what it is, that the best thing that you can do is find your way towards a substantial amount of money. And that way you're in a position where you can choose to help whatever organizations that you're going to choose to want to help. I said, otherwise, what you're going to end up doing and being is a person who sits around and talks all the time about what it is that we need to be doing, probably on a street corner, maybe in a restaurant, but that's going to be what the conversation is, and it's going to add up to nothing but talk. And so, you know, when you have even those of us who have been historically committed taking that position, and it's not flowing from a emotional low point. It's flowing from sober-minded observation of where our priorities are, where we stake our interest at. It's in many ways frightening. And it was frightening for me to hear that come out of me. But I believe that. I definitely believe that now, after having done this as long as I've done it. You know, and it's hey, It frightened me. It really did. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, we're at the top of the hour. I think this is a good point to take a bit of a break. You're listening to Sign of the Times, brought to you by New Power Radio Network and the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. We'll be right back.
Hello. My name is Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I am the author of a new and exciting book titled Foolish Floyd: The Life and Times of an African-American Contrarian. Now, I'm certain that you know someone like Floyd, 50-something years old from Greenwood, Mississippi, who has all of the answers to black America's problems, if only we would stop being so stubborn and listen to him. Let me give you a sample of the wit and wisdom that one receives from Foolish Floyd. When told that he was an African-American, Floyd responded, I'm black. Ain't never been to no damn Africa, and neither have you. When I asked Floyd to go and testify about a brutal crime that he had seen committed in his community, his response was, let's say that I do go and tell the police who did it. Hell, everyone in the Fifth Ward knows who did it. That ain't no big secret. The next thing you know, old Floyd is going to be down at the police station picking these bastards out of a lineup. Then I have to go to court and testify against them in public. The entire time, I'm living next door to their people. No, sir. I will pass on getting my head blown off. Let someone else play the hero. I would rather be alive. If you think that you would like to read more about Floyd, please visit Amazon.com and purchase a copy of Foolish Floyd, The Life and Times of an African-American Contrarian. Thank you.
Hey, my beautiful people. This is Andreanne, and I'm host of the show Holistic Health and Healing on the New Power Radio Network. We all know that without your help, nothing else is worthwhile, right? I mean, what's the point of being rich if you end up spending all the time you have left and all the money you've made on the way to get back the health that was neglected on the journey? Well, let's get back to making our health and well-being a priority. Then the wealth and prosperity will automatically flow. So join us as we dive into all matters of health and well-being holistically in all areas of your life. We'll discuss the causes and effects of diseases and medical conditions and what you can do to heal from these effects. You'll hear suggestions on how to best utilize the medical establishment for your benefit instead of their profit. We'll explore all of the latest innovations in health and well-being and how to apply them in all areas of your life. In the end, we must remove everything that's creating and maintaining the pain and disease in our lives in order to treat our wounds and to heal. Here's to your holistic health. Many blessings. Peace.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Sign of the Times, brought to you by New Power Radio Network and UAC. Please consider making a $10 monthly contribution to Sign of the Times. You can do that via our U.S. mailing address, 1623 Dalton Street, D-A-L-T-O-N, number 14939, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. Again, it's Sign O the Times. Please send us out a donation at 1623 Dalton Street, number 14939, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. So, Dr. Jones, I yield back to you to reintroduce tonight's topic.
Okay, Queen. What we're talking about tonight is it basically boils down to the disappearance of an intellectual tradition amongst African Americans and how that occurrence is actually having phenomenal effects upon the psyche of not only black children, but in the entire black world. And we've also delved into the idea of, quite simply, where do we go from here? What does all of this mean? How do we reach a people that have, for all intents and purposes, chosen at so many critical junctures to go ahead and behave, act, and set priorities that work against their survival, their material survival? And I yield with that, Queen.
Now, one thing that we know in learning from our history is that, you gave the example of reading Malcolm X's biography and the fact that, when you get that experience, you realize that being intelligent, being able to articulate, being able to express yourself in a manner that not only communicates your point, but it communicates your passion. We learn that through Brother Malcolm. And so when people have had the opportunity to experience that, I think that it gives them a different perspective. And it also lets them know that being an intelligent person, or at least, stepping up your education game and trying to support those who are seeking higher education or whatever, trying to expand their horizons, that is a revolutionary act. And we all know that Brother Malcolm definitely was a revolutionary who took his skills, his intellectual skills, his life experience, even his spirituality, and handed it and gladly shared it with the people. And so in looking at literature that we do have available to us, is there anyone that's close to that you can see in modern literature? And how can we, develop that character so that people will think that it's okay to be smart, okay to express an intelligent point of view and not contribute to, the shenanigans that we see too often on media such as WorldStar and even on Facebook at some point?
Let me say first off, there's some brilliant brothers out here writing, no doubt, but I've not come across another Malcolm, the autobiography of Malcolm X. But I think that it's a whole lot more complex than simply exposing them to Malcolm's story. you made a beautiful point earlier where you were talking about so much of it begins in the home. And I'm not talking about people who are African-American scholars and thereby teaching their children. I'm talking about parents who teach their children to just go forward, to be the best that you can do, can be, and raise them up with what can best be termed a healthy sense of self-esteem, respect for people, being teachable. I believe that all of those things, some of them are personality traits, but I think a large portion of it actually does flow from the home that people are raised in. By working with, and I work primarily with African-American males, I can tell you that we have a humongous population of African-American males that are willing to learn, are receptive to learn, and just need someone to guide them and teach them. And then we have a sizable population of African-American males that, regardless of what you expose them to, they have been convinced early on, and I mean thoroughly convinced. You know, it reminds me of, remember school days when they went to get the chicken? And they wound up having a conflict with some of the locals. And ironically, the local who spoke the loudest was Samuel L. Jackson before he was really famous. And he makes this statement outside of a Kentucky Fried Chicken. He says, "Look here, we's niggas. You know, we was born here. We gonna die here, you know." And they have mentally tied themselves to something that we're not going to be able to get them to divest from, you know, and that population now for me, I've given up on. I don't want, you know, I'm not reaching out to them anymore. You know, for instance, I had a young man in my class who was convinced. Number one, I bet you he would come to maybe one class every 2 weeks. And the class met three times a week. So out of six classes, he would show up for one. And somehow during the first portion of my class, when I allow my students to talk about current events, we got to talking about Big Meech, you know, gang leader, what have you. And he wanted to, you know, he was very excited. You know, I guess we were talking about his interest. So he begins to say that Big Meech was more influential in Black America than Barack Obama. And I'm like, huh? Yeah. Because, see, you gotta realize that Barack Obama came away from a summit that he was having in he named some nation. And he came, he had to go to the penitentiary because Big Meech called him there. You know, Obama went in there to talk with Big Meech. You know, he that important. And I'm like, yo, I didn't see that in the news. You know, well, Obama pardoning Big Meech too. And I'm like, now, I really didn't see that. Okay. All right, I'm like, now, as much as they own that brother, if Barack Obama pardoned a gang leader, a gang lord, like Big Meech, that would, oh, my God. Could you imagine that? You know, I said, man, look here, I ain't, you know, I'm going to look that up, okay? And I'm getting ready to go into my lecture, and he says, see, you're just ignorant. You ignorant about what's important to Black America. Now, you know there was a part of me that just wanted to be like, what? Okay. Make a long story short, I went and looked it up. It was one of those fake news stories. Okay.
Mm.
Today, I got a call. I only go in to work now. I teach on all day Tuesday and Thursday. So today I get a call from him, and he then left, you know, a message in his little choir boy voice, about his grades were so bad that they dropped him from financial aid. And now he needs for me to write a letter for him to get reinstated back into school. Why should I do that?
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? You know, maybe there was a time before, you know, and it's that population of individuals that I'm not wasting my time on. I'm not spending any energy on them anymore. You know, and it's the exact same thing with the two young sisters, one 11, the other one 12, shot in the head in Chicago by stray bullets, but nobody know anything. You know. I've decided to no longer be chained to black folk who behave that way. You know.
Mm-hmm.
If I want you to succeed and I want your life to improve more than you do, it'll never occur. So I've kind of cut the rope, to be honest with you, you know, and I feel good, as James Brown would say. I feel very good about that, and I yield with that question.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you, Dr. Jones. It is a part of our growth process to know when to say when on a lot of things, because we will spend a lot of energy on hope, and hope doesn't get us to the next level where we need to be. It has to, everything we invest in has to bring about some sort of result, some sort of plus to our lives at this stage in the game, especially. So, in looking at him as an example, our children aren't valuing education the way that we used to, that we should, no matter where it comes from, whether it comes from a higher learning experience or whether it comes from a life experience or whatever. The value on education is not what it should and could be. And one of the things that I think that would help is changing the dynamics of the conversations that we allow to happen in our presence. And anytime we get an opportunity to engage in something that's going to be positive, I think we should. But on the other hand, when we have to be honest and brutally honest, Sister Andrianne and I were having a conversation about the tough love conversations that sometimes we have to have. That's where we're at, you know. And people are not in favor of the truth a lot of times. We'd rather hear what sounds good, what looks good, what makes us feel good. But that good feeling is only temporary, and we look up and it's 5-10 years later, and not only are things the same way they were on a lot of perspectives, they've gotten worse. They've gotten worse. So, yeah, I think those are good conversations to have. I mean, I think you should tell him, you know, why. Look, if I believe that it was one way or another, it might be different, but, you know, why should I invest, you know, in you when you haven't invested in yourself? And I told you about the conversation my granddaughter and I had last week about us moving back into OTR, you know, and she basically said, you know, I would be stressed out trying to worry about people that weren't worried about taking care of themselves. And so, it's a bitter pill to have to swallow with some of our people, but I do believe that if we change the dynamics of some of the conversations that we have, it can't help but spill over, and even if it only temporary plants a seed, I think that seed may eventually grow into something that we can actually nurture and, you know, and may actually bear fruit one day. So for those who are listening on your phones, please push 1 if you would like to come into the conversation. Dr. Jones, I'm going to probably let you go about 7:30. We got another about 15 minutes with Dr. Jones on the air. And if you're listening on your computer, please dial in at 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059, and please don't forget to push 1 if you would like to be a part of the conversation. So, Dr. Jones, we've been having these conversations for a couple of years now. I mean, and I think that they have changed. I think the dynamics have changed. I think that our solidarity as a group has changed and gotten a lot stronger. And so transitioning that, though, into the positive energy that we speak about all the time, how are we going to do that? And where should we even speak about beginning?
You know, for me, I don't see the bonds and ties being any stronger today than they were 10 years ago. I still see a lot of foolishness. But to deal with the question that you're asking, how, you know, where we should start, you know, it always starts on the local level. You know, hell, I think it would be a step forward if we was even to get together and have a dinner together with no strife, you know, with no disagreement, no discord or what have you. That would be, and that's sad to say, that would be a positive to be able to sit down and break bread with one another. However, we are where we are, you know, and the, you know, the plans haven't changed. You know, the solutions haven't changed. You know, it's the same thing that Booker T. Washington was talking about, you know, building up your community. Malcolm talked about it. All of our prophets have talked about it, the exact same thing. But getting our people positioned psychologically to be able to do such, that's the tricky and difficult thing for us. And I, to be honest with you, and I don't want to be, you know, the eternal pessimist, but just looking at it honestly, I see so few of us who are really, well, there are some of us who are really committed, but it's always feast or famine. You know, you'll find two or three who are really committed to doing something, but then you'll find 300 to 400 who are just more concerned with going ahead and living their lives and doing what they do. And just say, well, we black and we're going to have to deal with what we get. Well, you know, hey, you know, it is what it is. I don't know how to do it. You know, I do it in the class. I do what I do in the classroom. I hope I inspire some folk. I was actually just approached by the 100 Black Men of Houston to serve as the faculty mentor for our campus chapter of the 100 Black Men. Not certain if I want to do that even. You get what I'm saying? I'm kind of, you know, kind of receding back and backing away from a whole lot of things that I would have jumped at the opportunity to be involved in previously. You know, so I don't know. That's the honest answer and probably the most powerful and significant answer that more people should use. I don't know. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, and those of us who have found common ground with one another, I think owe it to ourselves to continue to support what each other do. And I think that we've got a good group with Sister Andrian and Sister Elena being on with us now, Brother Ashe. We're making the connections that we need to make. And I think our biggest challenge is, well, I know my biggest challenge is one, deciding where the revenue stream can come from so that we can continue to expand what Sign of the Times does and the New Power Radio Network and UAC. We still have the connection with the black farmers. We still have the connection with the black paper company. But we need more volunteers. We need more people to help. And for as many people who talk about self-sufficiency and being independent, I don't know, it's weird. When the opportunity arises, it's like, okay, it's almost as if we feed off of throwing up challenges versus investing energy into something that could actually work in a positive way. So, you know, I don't know. I think we owe it to ourselves more so than anybody else to keep going because I think that what the network that we do have, the support that we can offer each other, to me, is priceless. So,
I agree wholeheartedly with everything you're saying. But then there's a part of me that also looks at it from the perspective of this may be the moment that I need to step away from everything and focus upon making money and then utilizing that money that I make to support those who are doing things within the community, you know, because this formula of trying to uplift our people by reasoning with them ain't working because they're not reasonable people. And that's just what it, that's what it's boiling down to for me now, you know, and the question becomes, how much longer do we do this? How much longer do we in many ways offer them life-sustaining water to see them literally walk by it at best, at worst spit in it, okay, and mock it and laugh at it, get a good laugh and a good chuckle at it. You know, it leads you, you know, it leads you. I was having this conversation with my best friend yesterday, and I told him, I said, man, you know, it could be that Earth is an advanced civilization's hell, and they send people here to do a sentence. And for us to be educated, intelligent, pro-black, we must have did something horrible to be sent down here to live a life of frustration amongst people who obviously don't care about even their own liberation and salvation. That's a hell of a mental state to be in when you think about it, when you don't even care about your damn self. And I yield with that.
Yeah, I've seen people in that state, being in the neighborhood I was in for 25-plus years. We see it all the time. And I think that it's just a reflection of what has been taken away from us and what has only been given up to us either in very small doses or given to us long enough for them to be able to use our presence in order to get what they wanted. Unfortunately, when it comes to our economic independence, I think we are too reliant on our oppressors to give us what we need in order to get what we want. But sometimes it's extremely necessary. It's one of those necessary truths. And I read a quote today that said that truth is my leader. And so as long as we're telling the truth, I think that things will continue to grow from that. But, you know, in telling that truth, we have to be honest with ourselves first and know where our limits are and know how far we can push ourselves. So as we build around conversations that are going to help uplift our people, and again, getting back to the need to improve our education on a comprehensive level, politically, socially, economically, civically. And so there's a movie out called I'm Not Your Nigger. So can you talk about that piece a little bit and incorporate it into the conversation? And maybe some of our young people might be willing to see the movie for a different reason than just for entertainment. And I yield.
Yeah. When I wrote my piece about it, the title is I'm Not Your Negro. And you know, I don't know where my mind was at. I put I'm not your nigger, but what, you know, it's a documentary about for my money the greatest social critic America has ever created, James Baldwin, and basically it flows off of a proposed story that Baldwin was planning on writing, and it would be his interactions and in the intertwining of his life with the assassinations of Medgar Evers, Brother Malcolm, and also the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so in saying that, this filmmaker, I want to say Raoul Beck, a Haitian filmmaker, basically uses snippets of Baldwin's life and his words. It's narrated by Samuel L. Jackson, I believe. And he weaves the story of actually what Baldwin did say at each of these moments, and puts in there some very riveting footage about Baldwin's commentary. For my money, it is the single greatest film I've seen probably in my lifetime. There have been other moments of black cinema that have been very inspirational and what have you, like the campfire scene in Glory. But taken in its totality, and I'm a Baldwin fan, so I'm definitely biased. He has done and actually provided me with some inspiration to do some other things. He has done what I thought was impossible, and it was to bring Baldwin and deliver him into the laps of a new generation of black activists and thinkers and intellectuals without them having to lift or flex any of their mental muscles. He laid it in their lap. And so that in and of itself is a very exciting thing, a new way, a different way, so to speak, to look at sharing what are the intellectual giants out of our tradition with the current generation of individuals. It is a must-see. And unfortunately, you know, I'm in Houston. Only one theater is showing it, theater in River Oaks. And anyone who knows anything about River Oaks, it's a wealthy white enclave. And I went in there, and it was black folk in there, but it was a bunch of older white folk who apparently just go and see, because the River Oaks Theater actually only has one movie screen. And so it's the only film that's going to be showing for like the next 2 weeks.
Well, I haven't found it anywhere in Cincinnati as of yet, but I am still looking, and I would hate to have to get a copy from the bootleg man, because none of the theaters close by are choosing to show it here, which, you know, is very disappointing, but I'm still looking. I'm still hopeful.
I think those are the, you know, that's like the fine print of what allows you to morally be able to get it from the bootleg man when ain't nobody showing it in your city. So you might as well go ahead and get it, because it is phenomenal. It really is. It gives you a beautiful portrait of Baldwin, a very beautiful portrait. And it deals with the FBI hunting Baldwin, the covert things that were going on. And Baldwin, you know, there's a moment where Baldwin talks about leaving America. And he says he left America and went to Paris with $40 in his pocket and no place to stay, because he knew that there was nothing that could happen to him in Paris that would exceed what he dealt with on a daily basis in America. You know, when you think about that statement, that's an incredible, incredible, incredible statement.
Wow. Well, I plan on checking it out sometime between now and next week. So do you have a homework assignment for next week? Did I lose you, Dr. Jones?
No, I was muted. It might actually be interesting for us to take a look at James Baldwin, to deal with some of Baldwin's stuff, who he is and what have you, and why Baldwin is so important. So let's look at James Baldwin next week.
All right. Sounds good to me. Well, you heard it here first, everybody. You got your homework assignment for next Wednesday on Hot Topics with Dr. James Jones and Queen T. We thank you, Dr. Jones, and appreciate your time and commitment to Sign of the Times and the work that you do where you are,
thank
too.
You,
so tomorrow night, we'll be back with Sister Elaine T. We're going to discuss getting around the HNIC. And if you don't know what the HNIC is, I suggest you check it out. Maybe Google it. I'm not going to delay you getting to your next presentation, Dr. Jones. Thank you for being on the air. We want to leave tonight in recognizing Brother Al Jarreau, born March 12, 1940,
yes.
And he passed away February the 12th of 2017. We lost another good one, y'all. So we want to end this with mourning. Peace, everybody.
Peace.